everybody. Welcome back to the Retro Recall Podcast. We're here with a first for us. We're starting off a new series we like to call Retro Recall Shorts. These are kind of a little bit of a series to start on the off weeks. They'll be a little bit shorter in nature, maybe about a half hour in length or so. We'll pick a topic that's near and dear to our hearts. Today, I'll be discussing a little bit about the Banjo-Kazooie series, one of my favorite of all time. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the history behind it, some interesting facts, as well as my experience with the game, some of the things that really stood out to me as a kid when I first experienced it. And even as an adult, I still hold this series very close to my heart. So this to start off, kind of a little background on it. It was developed by Rare. A lot of people know Rare from the N64 days. I mean, they were almost like a mega conglomerate of hit titles in that era. You know, a lot prior to Banjo-Kazooie, a lot of people knew them for the Donkey Kong Country series on Super Nintendo. They were really kind of pushing the edge on graphics at the time. They had used the pre-rendered models, which gave Donkey Kong really that 3D look. Back around 95, they were also working on what was known as Project Dream for the Super Nintendo. And it was originally kind of set very different from what Banjo-Kazooie would eventually become. But it was actually centered around a boy with a kind of like a wooden sword that was his weapon. And he had to battle a bunch of pirates. They were kind of led by a guy named Captain Blackbeard. Yarr. So the game actually ended up being too big to fit onto a Super Nintendo cartridge. So it started to expand. It was right in that end of the Super Nintendo era. And they moved it to Nintendo 64 and decided, hey, we're going to take this and turn it into more of a 3D role-playing game type project. And with the new graphics and the 3D evolution, they were able to create a really graphically impressive game. But the problem was when they started messing with all the polygons and making all the cool backgrounds and everything of that nature, they found out that the N64 just couldn't handle it smoothly. And so the game kind of struggled a little bit at that moment. In the background at the Rare studio, they were working on what was called Conker's Quest at the time. And it eventually changed names a few times as well, as a lot of these games do during the development process. It went on to be known as 12 Tales Conker 64, which some of you may have heard of, as that's one of the development carts or ROMs I think that the owners of Rare still have out there. They've teased it on social media. But the final ended up being Conker's Bad Fur Day, which was definitely a cult classic. Another one of those Rare titles that everyone remembers. So Tim Stamper, who's one of the founders, I think it was the Stamper brothers that co-founded Rare, they like what was coming out of the Conker project, and they kind of were looking at the N64 days and the success of Super Mario 64. And that pushed them to opt to change the project over out of that RPG format that they were kind of struggling with graphically and change it over to a 3D platformer. So Project Dream at that point in time kind of left that idea of RPG, the boy, it started as 2.5D Super Nintendo game, and now it merged into the bear is the main character. And what a lot of people don't realize is that Banjo's design actually was implemented in Project Dream, but he was kind of like a side character as a bear. And that design was a huge hit internally at Rare. So they actually loved the design of Banjo when they came up with it. I mean, they liked it so much. Some of you may remember Diddy Kong Racing on the N64. Banjo-Kazooie was in that. Well, mainly Banjo. And that came out a while before Banjo-Kazooie ever came out to the public. So, I mean, that's how strongly they thought about it. I mean, he had nothing to do with the Donkey Kong world. But here he was in a game, prior to his first game release. I had done some research, so Game Informer actually has a really nice article on the history of Banjo-Kazooie, and they provide some fun tidbits, so definitely credit to Game Informer for some of this information. They also have a few references that are kind of interesting to Project Dream and Banjo-Kazooie. In Banjo-Kazooie, they actually drop some little Easter eggs to the original project. It included in Mad Monster Mansion, the level, which is one of my favorite levels in the game. I'll talk a little more about that in a little bit here, but they had a portrait of Captain Black Eye, the original pirate from Project Dream, and they actually brought him back again, which is funny to me because these guys were kind of goofy that developed this game. I love their humor set, but they actually brought Captain Blackbeard again for Banjo-Tooie, but this time he was in a pub and he was kind of complaining about the bear that stole all of his glory, which is kind of true. I mean, he was supposed to be the, one of the stars, and yet Banjo-Kazooie kind of lived out. So if you've played any of the games, you know, there's one thing about Banjo-Kazooie. It's the cheeky British humor. These guys all had, great design taste. They were all over the map. The sense of charm, I mean, it's just oozing all over the game. It's one of the things that really draws this game into, and besides the good gameplay, but really brings you coming back. It's all those classic funny lines, the characters that you remember, the giant googly eyes that all the objects and everything seems to have. Fast forward to 98. That's when Banjo-Kazooie kind of hit the scene. It was a surprise smash hit, and at the time, Nintendo owned 49% of the Rare gaming studio, so a lot of people associate Rare and Banjo with Nintendo, and rightfully so. I mean, Nintendo was driving a lot of the ship over there at the time. Rare eventually went on to become one of the biggest hit producers out of N64. I would even argue that they had more hits, or right up there with Nintendo themselves. Some of the highlights are Donkey Kong 64, which you think of Donkey Kong as Nintendo, but Rare developed that title, very much in the same vein as Banjo-Kazooie, although I think Banjo-Kazooie is a better, more polished game overall. They also produced Conker's Bad Fur Day, as I mentioned. You got Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, Blast Corps was Rare, GoldenEye N64. That's got to be one of the favorite games for a lot of you out there. Perfect Dark, another huge series, Diddy Kong Racing, Jet Force Gemini, and one of the ones people probably don't realize as much is Mickey Speedway USA. That's actually a fun racing game. Believe it or not, that's a good kart game. Don't overlook it. Rare was on a roll in that era. I don't think there's a dud on the list for N64, so if you want to go and look into being a subset collector of video games, hey, look no further than the Rare set. I mean, that's a stacked list, especially if you want to keep a small Nintendo 64 collection. And Nintendo actually even trusted Rare enough during this era to lend them the Star Fox license, which was a big deal. They had actually been developing a new game called Dinosaur Planet, which made the news maybe a year ago because the ROM for that ended up leaking. And at that point, they had skinned a lot of it with Star Fox characters. And it even had voiceover work. It was really impressive. I just watched some video gameplay on it. It was amazing what Rare was doing right at the end of the N64 era, but it never saw the light of day. And if you want to play it today, you can get a copy of the ROM. It's leaked on the internet. But it eventually became Star Fox Adventures on the GameCube. And that was the title that everybody knew from Rare as far as the legacy of that game. But now back to Banjo-Kazooie. So my first experiences with the game was at a local rental store as a kid. I know I rented it at least more than once. And I was just sucked into the goofy world. The level design was fun. The humor was great. The bear and bird were kind of the perfect ragtag duo. And the music was super memorable. One of the defining designs definitely was the amount of characters with gigantic eyes, like I mentioned. I mean, these things are huge. And if you've ever looked at some of the legacy games of these guys that worked on that studio, they've put some of those gigantic googly eyes and other things. I mean, you could just take a random item like a box and stick googly eyes on it and boom, it's a Banjo-Kazooie character. Definitely a signature trait of this design crew. And the music was composed by Grant Kirkhope, who it kind of reminds me a little bit of the old classic, kind of Disney Mickey tugboat type music, a little bit orchestral, but a little more folk, a little more upbeat. It's kind of punchy, charming. It does nothing but put a smile on your face. That soundtrack is so catchy. You'll find yourself humming to all sorts of different tunes in there. I love it. They've pressed some of those on vinyl if you want to get a collector set. I know Grant Kirkhope just recently released a rejiggied soundtrack on vinyl if you want to check out another version of some of those songs. And one of the things I also thought was funny is like these guys, I mean, they must have had a blast at work because I remember an interview with Grant Kirkhope And he was talking about some of the sound effect design. A lot of the guys that worked on the game were the classic sound effects, you know, for the characters and stuff. But I remember him telling a story about how he had a swollen testicle, and there's a British slang for ooma knackers, which when they said fast, eventually became the sound effect for Mumbo, which was Umanaka. So that was actually had its roots in the British slang Umanakers. So, you know, it's just silly stuff like that. You'd be amazed at the things he didn't realize, like listening to the game as a kid. And man, I mean, this game just had love written all over it for these guys. They must have really, really enjoyed it and put all their effort into this game. It cracks me up. I mean, still today, even like the sound effects when characters are talking, they got the cheesy like, and they're saying funny things. So I'm sure they were limited on the amount of voiceover and stuff they could fit on those N64 cartridges back then. I also remember when Banjo-Tooie first came out, and it got one of those VHS tapes, which some of you may have from Toys R Us. They used to send out little preview tapes with games going on. And I remember that was definitely a standout for me. And after seeing that, I asked for Banjo-Tooie for my birthday, which was a big deal. And I got it brand new. It's one of the few games I got new back in the day. So that was always a special occasion. I kept the box. I kept everything. I actually flattened it and put it in a container, and here it is many years later, and I still have it. Back then when I used to play the games, I never beat them fully until I was in college. I kind of got that nostalgic itch to go back and revisit some of those N64 titles I remembered. I had my Banjo-Tooie copy still. Did not own Banjo-Kazooie. I had rented that, so bought a copy of Banjo-Kazooie. I mean, they were cheap. They were like $20 or something back then. And I was just glued to a CRT TV during a break every night when I came home from college. I was playing late until I beat them. When I looked up and did some research on the game prior to recording this, I looked up top N64 game list. And the first three lists that popped up, and I'm sure if I continued, it would be more the same. They all had Banjo-Kazooie in the top five titles for the N64. So, I mean, to me, it's considered iconic in the N64 world. And if you talk to fans of the series, you get mixed opinions of which game was better between Banjo-Kazooie or Banjo-Tooie. To me, I think they expanded and built an incredibly ambitious game out of Tooie, and they made some quality of life improvements from the first game. The one thing I hated about the first Banjo-Kazooie game, and there was a lot of collect-a-thon type 3D platformers in that era, was the no collecting aspect. I didn't mind the collecting itself. I mean, there were a number of other collectible items. You had the jiggies, the honeycombs, the feathers, the eggs, the jinjos, etc. But the notes only tallied the max you got at any particular level run. So if you missed a jiggy and you were to come back to the level, you would have to, if you missed the note, you would have to come back to that level, do it again, and then see what your total count was. Or you had to get all 100 if you wanted to get all 100. Now, the game certainly didn't require you to get every single one, but you needed some of them to progress certain areas of the game. Banjo-Tooie fixed that. Now you didn't have to worry about coming back. Just if you grabbed the musical note, it was gone and you can move on. So those are the type of things that I think were like definitely improvements. I think where the big knock on Tooie was is the size of the worlds. I mean, they really went ambitious on the second game. The size increased. Sometimes you had to backtrack to other worlds once you picked up a move or a transformation. And I personally, I don't get the hate on that because I didn't think it was annoying at all. It didn't feel like a chore to me. It felt more like unlocking a challenge. And many of the levels actually had shortcuts connecting between levels. So they could only be accessed with a specific learned ability, or maybe you had to transform into a character, like turning into an ant, etc. So to me, that was kind of amazing. It actually made you think, and it made it a stronger game, in my opinion, Banjo-Tooie than Banjo-Kazooie. But a lot of people remember Banjo-Kazooie. That was the first one they played. I mean, it was the first one I played. And that's their favorite. And I get why that's at the top. But, you know, I definitely say Banjo-Tooie for me is, you know, besides the fact that's the one I got as a kid, that's the one I remember the most. And that's my favorite of the series. I personally think Banjo-Kazooie, when it first came out, it took the Super Mario 64 success and it just built on it. I actually think it was a better game than Mario 64. I will always vote it ahead of Super Mario 64. I understand, you know, the popularity of Mario. It's never going to be above it, but it's close. And, you know, Banjo centers around the bear and bird duo. So Kazooie is the bird, and it's kind of like a slapstick combo. Like, Kazooie is kind of like the silly bird, the goofball, and Banjo is more the level-headed bear. And the first game starts off, it's a pretty generic story, but it, you know, it's silly and goofy. Banjo's sister, Tootie, she's been kidnapped by the evil witch Gruntilda. And then each level has a different set of challenges, from finding a hidden Jiggy to requiring certain moves to unlock areas or get to those. There's bosses or boss-like type challenges. There's puzzles where you have to figure different things out. There are collectibles like Jinjos that you have to get in order to unlock the Jinjo Jiggy, and more. And you don't have to get 100% of everything. It's just like any game. You can skip over certain ones, pick the ones you want to do. You do need a certain minimum amount to progress in the game, but as long as you meet the minimum threshold, you'll keep moving. You'll meet many memorable characters throughout your journey, and they're going to help you and reward you with Jiggies along the way, whether it's a task, helping them out. I vaguely remember a cheeseburger, you know, having to collect cheeseburgers for one of the animals that was hungry. And then eventually, when you get enough Jiggies, the Jiggies look like jigsaw puzzles. A lot of people associate that. They're golden. They're shiny. You know, when you get them, it feels like you accomplished something. There's a little musical sound effect. And if you get enough of them, you can unlock the next world. So in the same way that Mario 64 used the stars, Banjo-Kazooie very much uses Jiggies in that manner. And the collectibles all have kind of a meaning to them. Like, feathers give you different abilities, like flying once you learn them, invincibility, which you need for certain tasks. You'll meet other compadres along the way that will help you on your quest. Yeah, a big one is Bottles the Mole. He's kind of like a drill sergeant. And so he's like, oh, one, two, you know, kind of guy. And he teaches you new moves so that you can learn and progress. Each level, you learn new movesets that, again, will help you be able to accomplish new tasks. It all builds upon itself. And then you also got Mumbo the Witch Doctor, which I was mentioning about the Umaneka. He's kind of like a witch doctor, and he offers you transformations, and you have to collect the Mumbo tokens in order to get those. And some of the more interesting transformations to me, I really like the washing machine and the pumpkin. I thought they were kind of funny. But each transformation does offer a purpose, and it has a task to it. There's a meaning to it. So it's not hard to figure out what you got to do with a lot of those. I mean, there are strategy guides if you get lost, and there's plenty of helpful hints on the internet. But, you know, to me, there was just so many layers of gameplay and interesting, and there's always something new you had to figure out. A couple standout levels for me in the first Banjo-Kazooie game, definitely Mad Monster Mansion. I love a good spooky Halloween theme with characters. I actually commissioned a painting for my game room just from an artist I knew that, you know, was centered around that level. That's how much I like it. Treasure Trove Cove, which was a very pirate beachy theme. I always remember the shark. It reminded me of Jaws. You like go in the water and it's like dun, 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 dun. And it's like chasing after you in the ocean, trying to murder you. The challenge, there was a giant crab challenge that was pretty fun. And that, you know, there were some puzzles and just the whole theme. It was just fun. It was a fun lagoon, you know, pirate, you know, nice and happy adventure. Freeze EZP, because every game back then had to have a frozen level, but it had a lot of character. It had a lot of fun characters, like helping the Christmas tree lights. They were called the Twinklies from the Twinkly Munchers. They were trying to eat them while they were trying to get up on the Christmas tree. You got Gobi's Valley was another one. That's kind of a desert Egyptian theme with Gobi's camel, but I always remember the giant Sphinx. For a long time, I got mixed up after I hadn't played it a while and thought Gobi was the giant Sphinx, but he's actually the camel. So you have a whole mission around Gobi, but lots of great memories. Probably my least favorite level, and I think this is for a lot of people in the first game, is Clunker's Cavern. It's kind of like a cave in underwater world. And I don't know what it was about underwater worlds, you know, even like in Zelda, the water temple, a lot of them were kind of tedious or easier to get lost in. If the textures weren't super different, you know, it's easy to think you're in the same place and get lost somewhere else. I liked Clanker. I liked the fish, And I like going inside the fish and the mission there, but I think that's about the highlight for me. So also Banjo-Tooie. So Banjo-Tooie was my favorite, as I noted. My favorite level there is Witchy World. And that one is just a fantastic conglomeration of all sorts of different things. It's kind of got like a carnival look to it. You got a wide mix of things from aliens and flying saucer mission to a giant inflatable dinosaur. That's one of the most memorable boss battles in Banjo as a series to me. It was fighting Mr. Patch, Mr. Patch is kind of a down on his luck inflatable dinosaur balloon who has patches all over him, who's barely like hanging in there, and you got to like fly around and blow the patches off Mr. Patch. You know, certainly remember that. I actually had a painting commission too of that Witchy World. I love it. It's just so colorful and fun and all the different variety. A couple others, you know, I definitely think Hailfire Peaks is one of the most talked about levels in Banjo-Tooie. It's an interesting mix of half the level is fire and half the level is ice. So you have a lot of different dynamics in there. And I also really like Pterodactyl Land. I've always been a fan of dinosaurs, and certainly the transformation there is pretty fun in that level. So I could keep on talking. There's so many more levels I love in Tooie as opposed to Kazooie, but I get it. I get the knock on Banjo-Tooie. Still a fantastic game. You'll still find it in the top 25 of every N64 list. So definitely they're more critiques than they are, you know, major problems with the game. The difference in Banjo-Tooie is like the first one you're after Gruntilda. The second one's after you defeated Gruntilda. Now she's come back as a skeleton with her three evil sisters. So they're always coming up with some kind of weird plot twist, and they're funny. I mean, Gruntilda and Eva's sisters, they crack me up in the game. But the Banjo series went on actually to have several more entries in the series, and people don't talk about them very often, but there was a couple titles and they were all pretty good titles, actually, at the end of the day. Game Boy Advance got a racing title called Banjo Pilot. It was fun. It's fairly uncommon. Think Diddy Kong Racing, but just Banjo-Kazooie theme. You know, first he got a star in as a side character in Diddy Kong Racing 64. Now he gets to have his own entry, just like it. They also made a full-fledged GBA game, a Banjo game, which I'm surprised more people don't talk about it. That was Banjo-Kazooie Grunty's Revenge. It's kind of like isometric platforming. The GBA, of course, you're a little more limited. It couldn't do 64 level graphics. So the only thing about it is the platforming, I'd say, is maybe slightly harder just because of the angle and viewpoint. But all the characteristics of a great Banjo game are there. The character, the concepts, the great ideas for puzzles and missions. Everything's there. If you like Banjo or you like Banjo type games, go play that one. Don't overlook it. It's a fantastic game, and it's a must own for fans of the series. And last but not least, and I bring up this one purposefully last, it's the elephant in the room, but Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. It's technically the third mainline Banjo. It came out on the Xbox 360, but it was also kind of the one that no fan was asking for. We all were hoping for Banjo-3E. The hint was out there. They kind of teed it all up, and then we got Nuts and Bolts. So I played through it when it released. I got it for Christmas when it released. It was one of the games I had asked for. It was kind of a car building game, and it's fun in its own right. It's not a bad game by any means. It just wasn't what I wanted for a Banjo game, and I think that's the way a lot of the fans felt about it. I thought Banjo, the rendering they chose in that too, now that we're heading to much more defined graphics, I thought it was a little weird, the look they chose for him. You know, but I was happy to have any Banjo game at the time. You know, I wasn't mad about it, but I was a little disappointed just because, you know, we had all these great platformers and then we went to, you know, cars and trying to try a new angle, which I get it. But we are, you know, left today waiting, hoping. Eventually, a new title in the series will come along. It was pretty exciting a year or two ago when Banjo-Kazooie was announced as an addition to Smash Brothers. And the rendering model for that was spot on. If there is a new game, Rare, if you listen to this, please use this model from Smash Brothers. That was perfect for Banjo and Kazooie. And I've seen several articles over the last maybe 6 months, year, that have insider rumblings that have been saying a new Banjo-Kazooie game is in the works, and only time will tell. I've been through this teaser so many times, I don't have my hopes up for it. But the reality is, I think there's a lot of fan craving, and I think even if it was an HD true remaster, I know there's somebody out on YouTube that's been remastering all the games in beautiful modern HD, not as playable, but just as little video, 3D videos. So if you want to see what Banjo would look like as a game in modern graphics, go check it out on YouTube. It shouldn't be too hard to find. But if you're wanting to play the original games, I definitely recommend going out to the N64 versions. Or really, to me, the best version to play is the HD ports that Microsoft did. They made them during the 360 era. They're available on the Xbox digital stores as well as part of the Rare Replay collection. They smoothed out the controls a little bit. It actually works really well with the Xbox controller, and the graphics were improved to HD quality without changing anything. It still looks exactly the same. They did not mess up any of the game. In fact, I think it actually is a better experience than the N64. And I think a lot of you may want to go down that route. And don't forget also the games were included, since Microsoft and Nintendo have been working together quite a bit lately. They threw them in and worked out a deal to include them for Nintendo Switch Online. So that's another great way to play them as well on your Nintendo Switch. So I'll close off with a highlight of some of the collectibles that are out there from Banjo-Kazooie. Some of the stuff I know of or own, for those wanting to collect, or the super fans out there kind of wondering what's out there. So on the original game art, since I'm an original game art collector, I will try to chime in as we go through different series about art that's out there as well. There's not too much for Banjo. That was in the era where a lot of the art was becoming digital. The box art for those are all digital. I do know of one painted piece, which can be seen on Heritage Auctions if you want to look up past sales. It's by Greg Winters. It was done for a Banjo-Kazooie ad. I own the original pencil and color prelims for that piece, but I do not own the painting that was sold through Heritage. The rest of the Banjo art I've seen has been mostly third party. I've seen a couple pencil sketches where they were scanned and digitally done for the covers. Not too much real art exists there for N64 games in general or Banjo. So maybe there's probably some development art sitting out there. I've seen some stuff, but I think a lot of the guys that worked on the series own that. So not too much out there if you want original art. For vintage collectibles outside the games and owning the games themselves, there was a line of BD&A plushes that were purchasable or pre-order bonuses. I've heard as a rumor that they were available. I've never seen that, but definitely potential. I know there's at least a Banjo and Mumbo one. There may be one or two others. There were different size variants too of them. They were not all the same. And there were also some pre-order bonuses that came out for the original N64 games. There were some soundtracks available. I know Best Buy had a t-shirt CD bundle for Banjo-Kazooie actually. So you could buy it, and it was basically cellophane, a t-shirt in a square pack to the CD. Target also had some really nice pre-order bonuses. They had a t-shirt coupon pre-order bonus that actually came in a mock N64 box packaging. Just looked just like the game, a little bit thicker because you had to fit a t-shirt in it, but it's really rare. For a long time, I'd never seen that before. I do own one of them. But it's definitely a cool little package. It's certainly hard to find. If you see one and it's a reasonable price and you want it, buy it, because you may not see another for a long time. There was also a 3-pack pre-order bonus. So those were those plastic N64 clamshells that, you know, you may have seen in the rental stores. They were plain and generic. There's some that say Nintendo 64 and like a metallic color writing. Well, they also did a couple special ones for Banjo-Kazooie. They're not hard to find. The individual ones on eBay, you know, they go, I don't know, I haven't looked in a while, but 20, 25 bucks a piece for each of them. They have like Banjo-Kazooie or a character or Mumbo or one of them in red metallic writing imprinted on there. But finding it in the box, original box with the 3-pack is very hard to find. So, but that is out there. As far as store promotional items go that I've seen, there were definitely several variants out there. All of them are rare, very rare today. No pun intended. There were several standees, both countertop size and full height. So those would be the 4 or 5 foot tall for both Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie. They also use very similar graphics to the standees, both the countertop variants as well as the full height ones for store promotional posters. Those were posters, not the ones you would find in like a Kmart or Walmart where they were individually sealed in plastic. You could buy them. These were ones that were provided by Nintendo to stores for advertising and were not for sale. I know Banjo-Tooie's is very similar to the standee. They also had several for Banjo-Kazooie, including some variants. There was a Walmart exclusive one that was kind of like a blacker background with Gruntilda. I do own several of the posters. They're fairly hard to track down, actually, Banjo-Kazooie posters. And there's a lot of Banjo collectors, so you'll have a lot of competition. Don't be surprised if they're selling for hundreds of dollars, some of the posters, and some of the standees sell for thousands. There's also some vinyl banners out there that are very, again, very similar graphics. They kind of used a lot of the similar graphics just to adorn all these different, they're just in different variations that are out there. So that's the bulk of the stuff I've come across. There's some other odds and ends, but you know, there's, you know, the core stuff is similar to what other game treatment got back in the day. But if you flash forward to today's modern collectibles, Fangamer has released some nice plushes for the series and some smaller collectibles. Like there's some limited, you know, they're, I don't know if they're molded or pressed, like gold items that they're not real gold, but they look gold kind of in Banjo-Kazooie style with the gold jiggies and all that. They're numbered sets of these. There's also First Four Figures has produced some beautiful statues. I own a couple myself. They've made a line of transformations for a different Banjo, and they continue to release these type of statues. So if you want a high end, nice looking adult like item, you know, certainly that is a good place to go. And even the Rare Game Store has some nice t-shirts and goodies from time to time. So we got the Amiibo for Banjo from Nintendo with the Smash entrance. So if interested in checking out any of the legacy of Banjo, most of the designers went on to form a new gaming studio called Playtonic Games, and they have released a spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie called Yooka-Laylee. It's very similar, tons of fun. It's got all the charm of Banjo, certainly worth a play. Also, they released a spinoff that is also Yooka-Laylee. It's kind of a cross between Donkey Kong Country 2D style and the 3D version. So there's like an overworld, and then you go into the separate levels. Both are fantastic. Definitely worth your time if you want to see the legacy of Banjo. And hopefully one day we will see another Banjo true sequel or the Banjo 3E we all wish we had. So thanks for tuning in, and catch us next week for a full-fledged episode on collecting.